welcome to the September 2021 ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune times. I am your host today, Zach Jans, and today we will have Brian Henry from ADM BQCI and also BK Morris from Fertilizer Week. We will start off today with grain market and then we'll work into fertilizer. There is a lot going on in the fertilizer world, so definitely stay in tune and we'll get you updated. Go ahead, Brian.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to be back with you. As Zach mentioned, my name is Brian Henry. I am the general manager of BQCI, located here in Minneapolis. And to touch on a little bit of something, Zach started out with fertilizer. There is an awful lot going on here in the grain markets also, but it isn't always being reflected in price action. In terms of the number of things we're watching here right now, it just feels like there's a paradigm shift that started a little bit before this time last year and continues. A number of things we're watching, of course, China, you've got some potential debt issues there. U.S., it's hard to believe, but I think we have some potential debt issues as well that are very likely going to have significant impact on currencies. In addition to that, you're looking at Baltic freight trading at a record high. You've had some suspect production in global crops. You've had some suspect production in the domestic crop, which is just kind of now starting to be evaluated from the standpoint of getting deep enough into the harvest to get a decent read. And then, of course, in terms of some of the shifts that we're seeing, trying to move these economies to less carbon being used. All these things are factors we're trying to keep a grip on here. What we've found is, in terms of price action, it just doesn't feel like the institutional investor wants to come in here and add a whole bunch of length right now. It does feel like the processor end user will buy breaks in both corn and beans, and frankly, for that matter, I think in wheat as well. As mentioned, we're still trying to evaluate just where the U.S. crop is from the standpoint of the eastern crop in terms of the reports we've seen early in the process. One of the things we've seen is the crop maybe not as good as once expected. While in western areas, we are finding some crop that's maybe a little better than expected. Break that down from a corn standpoint. If you end up with corn yield up over 77, probably justified to have market prices down around 450 from a futures standpoint. You end up sub 174, $5 to $5.50 is very likely justified at this point. On the bean side, there just simply hasn't been enough beans taken off in the east to get a good measure. In terms of our area, our traditional trade territory, I should say, they're kind of all over the board. There are some good beans. There are some poor beans. Some of the early ones are kind of short maturing. And of course, in areas that kind of dried out. So we'll probably need a few more days to get a good read on that. Some of the other factors that I believe are working their way out and I think will be positives for the domestic market. You had Ida, of course, beat up the Gulf pretty bad, but it sounds like we're going to end up with additional bean offers, eventually corn offers out of the Gulf, and we'll be back up to 7 or 8, maybe even 9 of the 12 export facilities able to execute sales here once we get into, call it, middle of October. So that is a positive. I do believe the Chinese have demand for beans and solid demand for beans. One of the things I'm a little bit concerned of on elevation, largely due to the Gulf being impacted, China's been an aggressive buyer of Brazilian beans after the first of the year. And typically, Brazil does not provide a lot of beans in January, but it feels like this year, despite still some hiccups in terms of their weather pattern and where they're sitting from a moisture standpoint, it feels like this year they've kind of taken it upon themselves to offer beans at a premium. And we're expecting now their pace of planting beans to increase considerably. If you want to look at the demand side on corn, there's a couple of key features. One of the primary ones, we did have a significant failure in terms of Brazil producing corn. Right now, from an export standpoint, Brazil's on pace to export 17 to 18 million metric ton of corn. USDA's got them exporting 22 million for this marketing year. and that compares to $35 million for the year of 20. We will get a report here towards the end of the month. We'll kind of point to where quarterly stocks were. We're looking at domestic corn stocks down around 1.18 to 1.2, and bean stocks down around 175 million bushel. If those numbers stand true, or if we get into a situation where the corn number ends up closer to, say, a 1.1, we're really kind of in a situation here where we'd actually be tighter on corn than we would be on soybeans. And all this is happening while, if you want to look toward new crop, right now I think from a profitability standpoint, you'd have to give the advantage to beans. We'll see where the demand lines up through winter and spring, but it's kind of shaping up that corn acres could potentially be the acreage we need the most of. So I think that's something to keep in mind. Despite having to pay elevated numbers for inputs, it feels like we've got the chance from a corn standpoint to perhaps see a little better value in terms of new crop. That said, we have at times been able to lock in values here that grossed anywhere between $800 to $1,000 an acre and probably shouldn't be ignored. A few other factors that we're just kind of waiting here for things to work out. I talked about China's debt issues, U.S.'s debt issues. FOMC will speak today. They may give us an idea when they're going to initiate tapering on bond sales. Or bond purchases, I guess, for them, but they've essentially been significant factors in funding the U.S. Treasury. So you've got some of those headwinds to potentially deal with as well. I really think that we've got a chance for inflation, to which has been pretty stemmy, to completely come off the rails here without some type of move from FOMC. Wall Street analysts, it looked like about 60% of them believe some type of taper will start to occur in November. But my caveat for that is Wall Street analysts have accurately called 11 of the last three recessions. So from that standpoint, I think it's a bit of a wait and see type moment, but certainly merits some consideration here. And we have to keep our eyes on the dollar and whether or not the dollar can hold these values. Because if the dollar can't, you're going to see higher values in corn, beans, and very likely your inputs as well. And right now, it just feels like the dollar can get back to resistance, but really can't punch above it. If we get to next Wednesday and the dollar hasn't punched above 93.7, it's probably going lower. And that would be a sure sign of further inflationary type pressures. We'll have to, of course, keep an eye on Brazil from a moisture standpoint. It feels like the Black Sea is healing up in terms of moisture for winter wheat planting and the like. Ukraine had good crops. They'll be able to supply perhaps a little more than typical. Brazil, of course, northern Argentina. Argentina at this point looks fairly good shape from a moisture standpoint. But when you look at La Nina continuing here, longer term, maybe look for a little drier profile for southern Brazil and northern Argentina. So right now, if I had to have a position, I'd probably ask Zach if he'd put it in his account, because I just don't feel like there's anything here that I really want to do. I don't think I want to short old crop values at these levels. I don't think I want to short new crop values at these levels. But I could be coerced to doing perhaps a little more selling of said values had I locked in some of my inputs already. And other than that, I think from my standpoint, I'm going to kind of handle this just like most other folks. Get a little deeper into harvest, see if we can get a little bit of read on this crop, and see where the demand lines up. I don't think we've lost any potential demand for beans to China, and I'm almost certain we haven't for corn. But you could get into a situation where if China isn't willing to take 14, 15, 16 million metric ton of corn, we're back to having plenty of corn. If they do, probably stay pretty snug from a corn standpoint. I think they've got demand for corn at least in the 10, 11, 12 million metric ton range, and perhaps it's even better than that. So wish I had more answers. I probably had more questions for you guys here today to ponder. But it feels like there'll be opportunities. It feels like these opportunities need to be taken advantage of. And we'll just kind of roll along with that for now. And we'll probably be back in touch with you next month. Zach?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I appreciate the update there. And I think the theme of this call is going to be to lock in margin where you can. Great recap on the grain side. We'll move over to fertilizer. BK, if you're with us still, feel free to jump in and start a recap on fertilizer.
This is BK with Fertilizer Week. I'm going to start with phosphates and work my way through. The phosphate story starts with the U.S. this week. We received multiple reports from participants at the TFI conference in Boston and also distributors in the Corn Belt and some other places telling us that they were getting warnings from Mosaic saying that their availability on MAP was very limited. This morning, Mosaic clarified finally a little bit of the message I couldn't get out of them yesterday. They said they have not been able to communicate MAP availability for the balance of 2021 yet to their customers. They haven't ruled out further sales through the end of the calendar year, but they simply cannot give people an answer right now on when that might be. They are still making some MAP, and they didn't specify this by their spokesman, but other contacts I have report that the reduced MAP they have coming out of their system now is going against previous commitments. So the short version of it is Mosaic is exceedingly tight on MAP. For those of you who've been reading the newsletters, you've seen that there has been very little MAP business done by Mosaic at NOLA in recent months. And most of the business that has been done by importers or traders who have offtake agreements from Mosaic reselling barges. The short version of it all is that it's going to be even tighter on MAP at this point than it was last year. How can we say that when Mosaic doesn't even know what their availability will be? Well, that's because they, at this point, don't want to make promises they can't keep. So there it is. So again, we're in that situation where DAP is available. And by the way, they're running their DAP and micro essentials at the rates that they had planned on coming into this market year. So that availability is fine. But in terms of if you're counting things on a P205 basis, and of course, one needs to do that, it looks like we're going to be even tighter in the fall than we were a year ago. What's that done to prices? We've got over $770 indicated as offers for MAP barges at NOLA. I don't know if anybody bid on that in recent days. The price in Brazil is about $720. So the fact is, on paper at least, yes, we are the highest priced MAP market in the world. That's been the case for a while now, but that doesn't really assure that we're going to get what's needed because the shortfall, of course, is built around the tariffs that keep Russian and Moroccan product out of the U.S. for as long as 5 years before that may be adjusted, barring some sort of intervention by the courts. I'm going to move on to urea. Biggest news there, this week's actually a rather rational week. Yes, we've had high prices. Prices shoot up at New Orleans this week into the 570s. We've had Brazil follow us up for several weeks. The U.S. was trailing Brazil in the global marketplace on urea prices. That changed this week. We moved ahead of them. Brazil buyers have responded by pushing their offer prices for cargoes of urea up by about $30. So right now we're about equal price between us and Brazil. That probably as good a place to be as any. The problem right now, though, in bringing urea to the U.S. remains the sort of backlog of activity of logistical needs being met in the U.S. Gulf and on the lower river. Unfortunately, we're still talking about Hurricane Ida because it has done so much damage, not just on the operational side for plants down there, but on the logistical side. I am told with a fair amount of certainty, because I did receive confirmation from one importer, but not the second, that two roughly 30 to 40,000 tons of granular urea destined for the U.S. have been turned away to Brazil. This was an easy decision for the importer to make because the prices are basically in line currently between the two countries. They had planned on bringing them to the U.S., but the problem is that they are facing potential demurrage issues. If they bring the cargoes here, there are not enough barges available in the time frame for these arrivals. These would be arrivals in October to get them loaded. So that is also contributing to these importers and people who are relying on those cargoes to come into the spot market, keeping the price of urea high. Farther overseas, in terms of activity by everybody's favorite market, India, they're dropping right now for what is expected could be about anywhere from 500,000 to 1 million tons of urea. That's a fairly typical volume. They haven't actually specified the volume, but India's supply shortfall right now is about 500,000 tons. In India, that's, I don't want to say it's a drop in the bucket, but that's nothing they're going to panic about. The problem for Indian buyers is that if they'd come into the market a couple of weeks ago, they might have found urea prices down around in the 460s. That's obviously not available to them anymore. And with Brazil paying $623 for urea a metric ton, and the U.S. price about $628 equivalent in all right now, $628 a metric ton, the Indians are going to get a heck of a bill, even if they only buy in the lower half of that 500,000 to 1 million range. The volume will be enough to probably continue to support urea prices in the near term, but it's also not really enough to push prices much higher. What is pushing urea prices higher and pushing all nitrogen prices higher globally or most is the high price of natural gas in Western Europe primarily. They have a cash cost right now for gas, that's the equivalent of about $20 an MMBTU. Right now, the Henry Hub price is closer to $5 an MMBTU. Obviously, that's a big advantage for U.S. buyers. There may come a point, though, when there's going to be competition, probably after River Close for U.S. urea. So we may see some greater exports leaving the U.S. for various markets during Q4, and we'll just have to wait and see. But right now, the U.S. producers in the Gulf, assuming they can get all of their plants running, will be in a great position to support the export market. It's not going to affect where any of the inland production is going, though. Staying somewhat with natural gas, of course, the first part of that equation when you're looking at high gas prices is the cost that what it does to ammonia. And that has been huge again in Europe. And here you may have read in the newspapers that CF at least temporarily shut down its two plants in England. They were in negotiations with the UK government this week to bring those plants back online. Not so much because they have an acute shortage of ammonia, but they need the CO2 offtake that comes from the production of urea and the other downstream products. The CO2 is critical for their refrigeration needs, and without it, they'll be back to drinking warm beer, I guess. I don't know. Bottom line is, after having had a $10 drop in the ammonia price at Tampa coming into September, you arguably will see a move back up at Tampa for October. These are always tough calls when the issue is what is presumably a temporary glitch in the market based more on something that's got nothing to do with agriculture. In other words, the price of natural gas is not really being driven up by the demand for ammonia. But we are seeing plants go down in Western Europe. We are seeing plants go down in Eastern Europe. And the odds are pretty good. We're going to see a response at New Orleans. Even if it's just a mild one, CRU isn't expecting a huge jump in the ammonia price at Tampa right now. And in fact, the main thing we're doing is we've moved from expecting another decline at Tampa to a perhaps flat or a marginal, say a $10 increase. That's as of this 5 minutes. Things are changing that fast. What that means, though, is if we see higher prices at Tampa, generally speaking, that eventually works its way through to the U.S. interior. The latest prices I have for ammonia in the U.S. interior, CF and perhaps others selling at around $6.75 in the Midwest at the end of last week. They moved their prices up to about $6.85 east of the river that we're certain of currently. Koch has posted prices upwards of around $715. They're not making sales at that level yet. What that tells me is that they're convinced that's where the market is going. So perhaps they're anticipating a greater hike at Tampa influencing the market than I've suggested to you. Another joker in the fertilizer pack this week is potash. The U.S. government has set a deadline of December 8th for U.S. banks to stop doing business with some Belarus companies, including the ownership of BPC. This is not a ban on imports of granular potash, but it means major U.S. banks can't do business with BPC and others. And that is a real headache. Most U.S. business is conducted based on credit lines through the big New York banks. And if you can't get a letter of credit from them, generally speaking, the accounting rules that a lot of folks in the marketplace, including the agricultural marketplace, they won't do business with you. They're not interested in business in anything but U.S. dollars, and they don't want to do it in a country where they don't know the rules. So this could start to produce, from December forward, a cutback in the amount of Belarus potash that comes here. It remains to be seen if that company can find alternative finance forms that will satisfy U.S. buyers that the financing for these transactions will be performed. The other issue it brings up is, will U.S. importers be willing to continue to deal with BPC. Obviously, when you can't do business with your, you know, with your credit lines, et cetera, in the U.S., that creates a whole level of risk that they really are not interested in dealing with. They don't have to do that with UKT. They don't have to do that, obviously, with the Canadians. Those folks have got access to all the credit they need. So I think the threat to BPC potash supply to the U.S. is gone from what was sort of, in my view, neutral a month ago to much more something to be concerned about. Will U.S. buyers be willing to do business with that company after early December? And we'll just have to see. I hope that covers most of what you folks wanted to hear about, but I will remain on the line for any questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, BK. Appreciate that wrap-up on fertilizer. I guess it doesn't matter what industry we're in, grain or fertilizer. There's just a lot going on. And we do have Jake Nieder with us here today. He's going to try to give some sort of recommendation on what the growers should be thinking about and doing. So, Jake, why don't you hop on and give an idea what your thoughts are.
You know, when prices get this high, folks, I am very leery to give recommendations. I think, like Zach said earlier, heard him say that if you're able to lock in margin, I'd lock in margin. I'd sell your inputs and buy your fertilizer. But it's hard to, at these prices, say, hey, let's be long through the spring. Let's be long for this. We're at some historical highs on all product prices. What I would advise everyone to take into account is some of what BK talked about. The Mosaic New Wales announcement that came out this morning has already driven the phosphate market up further. If you've delayed buying any fall phosphates, that price is going to be moving under your feet. Spring price is moving right now. The urea price, as BK alluded to about the Indian buying, the downtime at Deville, the fact that we're probably about a million tons behind on production and interior storage on total N in the United States, maybe a million and a half, some would argue that we have a lot more imports that will have to come to the U.S. by the time the spring rolls around. Now, I've urea traded for a long time. I used to do a large company's barge book, and I've seen a lot of urea come in 1 month's time frame and the market be able to handle it. What I would say to that, though, is there's not the risk takers that used to be in the market. That was pre the 2017-18 timeframe. It was back in the golden days of fertilizer trading and distribution when there were a lot of people out there. There's not the risk takers in the market today, and there's also a lot of global competition and low inventories out there. To be quite honest, we'd had a recommendation to have 50% of your spring needs bought. I was wrong in that recommendation. It should have been 100%. The reason I've always held back on spring nitrogen is because it's volatile. There's a lot of global producers. Right now, the situation looks somewhat tight, though. I don't want to incite panic and everyone go out and panic buy, but I would go back to what we've said before. If you can lock in margin, lock in your fertilizer prices because volatility is extreme. We've tried to put some thought to when do we see a correction, because I know that's what's on a lot of folks' mind. I don't think we see any form of a correction on UAN and urea until after the duties case comes, which is in March. That's when UAN could have some form of a correction. On the urea front, we need the plants to run consistently for a period of time here in the United States. We need to attract tons over and above what the world market price is, which we're doing right now, but we haven't got enough tons to cool the rally in the market. So I think we still have some work left to do on the nitrogen front before prices might cool off. Do we anticipate a dip in kind of that January, February timeframe? Yeah, we do. It's hard, though, to say whether or not that dip is going to be after another run-up of another $50 a ton. And that's the hard part to wrap our minds around, is the volatility is quite extreme. On the potash front, we get a sense that potash is starting to get a little bit more balanced. What BK talked about, that million tons that could be pushed around by PPC or half a million tons that they bring in here, that could disrupt some trade flows. Ultimately, what should happen, though, is that the markets should start to balance out as we get into the first quarter, second quarter of next year. It'll be tight for a while. It takes a little bit of time to build up inventories and supply. So hopefully next year we see a little reprieve in pricing for 2022 fall. But right now it's looking like these prices are going to be holding through the spring season. I think the tone from the conference here with a lot of the fertilizer folks is just caution. Everybody's lost money when they bought this high of prices. Not a lot of people are wanting to have product on hand when they're committing to this high of value. It dawned on me yesterday, I bought a cargo from Australia to come to the U.S. Gulf, and we paid $35 million for that cargo. It's probably one of the most expensive cargoes product I've ever bought in my life before. And I don't tell you this to scare anybody, but I think there's extreme caution in the market because we're very high prices. So recommendations, buy as you need it, buy if there's margin. The picture's not clear enough to say which way to go about being long into spring. And I know that we're getting to a point where the fertilizer prices are starting to challenge the overall market. So Zach, I'd kick it back to you and I'll stay on the line for questions.
Appreciate it, Jake. Thank you for that. We're just in limbo, I guess is the right term to put it at. Feel free to unmute your line. If you guys do have any questions, we'll definitely stay on. And if not, that's a wrap on our ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report for September 2021. Please join us for our next report on October 20th. Until then, if you'd like to learn more about ADM Fertilizer, go to ADMAdvantage.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next month. Again, feel free to unmute your line, and we'll definitely stay around for some questions if there is any.
Good morning, guys. Could you please repeat to the commentary on UAN?
Let me try and tackle some what UAN's got going on. If you've all been listening to our phone call conversations on a monthly basis, UAN's going through a duty exploration right now in North America. Well, United States particularly, but it will affect the Canadian market. And I want my Canadian growers on the call to really pay attention to this too. So play this out for a moment. We're going through the same thing that we did with the phosphate duties. Should the U.S. government find that there was incentives given to the producers in Trinidad and Russia, which are the two biggest importers of UAN into the U.S., they will put a duty on those products, which will increase the price. You're all aware of that. We've talked about this before. That decision's likely not made until March, and so we won't have clarity about what those duties will be and how they'll be finalized. But should that happen, we have to realize that in Canada, it is now a producer of UAN that can import into the U.S. without a duty. We will call on tons, and you'll now be in a bidding war with the states for tons of UAN. It is going to drive your UAN price up. There's no question that would be a second or third order effect. Now, if you're a Canadian buyer on the East Coast and whatnot, then I think you'd be fine. But if you're in the Central Prairies, you need to be concerned about where prices could go if this goes through. On the front of UAN today, though, you've had Donaldsonville, Louisiana. They got hit by that hurricane, and it's caused some supply hits. And so we're massively behind on the inventory that would normally be built already in the States. So we think that UAN is going to stay very firm through the spring season. But it's at a very high number, though. I don't know if a lot of folks can even find a number on UAN right now.
Thanks again for joining, everybody. We look forward to October 20th. Have a safe harvest, everyone.